Caromcast.com.
It's my Caromcast.
Welcome to the Caromcast, episode 7 from Chemical Light Factory Studios in Los Angeles. I am happy to tell you that I have my favorite co-host, Amy.
Sweet.
With me.
What's up, y'all?
And we wanted to talk about your experience with the Google phone.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted to talk about the release of Peter Molyneux's highly anticipated Xbox groundbreaking role-playing game, Fable 2.
Dose.
And we have a couple of our listener emails that we wanted to answer or try to answer some questions about.
Those are always fun. I think people should write in more, too.
If you want to send in your own emails, you can write to info@caromcast.com. Right, sister?
Babadoo, babadoo, pow.
So let's start just to get going here. Why don't we hear about the Google phone? You got it before everybody else did.
I did. There was a few things about the Google phone that I didn't like.
Okay.
We'll start off easy. The earpiece they give you, which now in LA, you need an earpiece when you're driving if you want to answer your phone.
Right, by law.
By law.
Same as in Toronto. They finally implemented no texting while you're driving, no talking on the phone while you're driving.
No. And I hate talking on the phone as it is, so this texting law is going to really sting a lot for me. But this earpiece, you stick one side in, and there's two sides, and then the other side's shorter than the first one, so it's not even, and it doesn't really work.
Okay.
I hated it. The Wi-Fi connection, it doesn't work unless you're basically humping a Wi-Fi hookup. It always goes out, so.
Okay.
You have a good feature on this phone. You can download on Amazon MP3. They give you a little link. You can click on it, search any song you want that's available for download. I got one of your songs, by the way.
Well, I would imagine that with a Google phone, you could at least expect some kind of elegant browser integration with the operating system of the phone.
I don't know about elegant, but it was fast. Faster.
You didn't have to smart type in some random ringtone company's
right.
thing in your credit card number and all of that.
And it's a touch screen, which is always a bonus.
Okay, so these are the good points.
These are some good points. And so when I downloaded it, which was great, there was an option where I could actually click on it and make it my ringtone.
Okay.
99 cents, 89 cents. It is cheaper than T-Mobile or Sprint or all those other companies charge $3 for a ringtone.
Okay.
Now you can just download it for a lot cheaper. The phone calls, when I was trying to make phone calls, it would either hang up in the middle of my conversation or I would sound like a robot.
You think that's your phone specifically or is
it? I don't know.
The design?
The reception was horrible. It could have been the design, but every single time I would have to keep calling the person back and being all embarrassed. Sorry, I hung up on you. Emails, I never got them. Forget it. You won't get notified about them. You have to basically log in through your browser onto your Yahoo or Gmail in order to upload your emails.
Well, one of the reasons that the BlackBerry is such a popular phone maker is because they specialized in email integration. That is the sort of pin upon which they hang everything else with the BlackBerry. So,
well, I feel like it's important. That way I'm not always rushing to get home to check my emails. It's easy access.
Sure.
If you're into IMs, epic fail.
Instant messaging?
Oh, yeah. Granted, they have this program where it's all the IM services that you could possibly have, MSN, Yahoo, AOL, and they crash every 5 seconds.
So in the end, what was the thing about the phone that was so special? Was it like an iPhone?
The big thing that made me be like, well, maybe I shouldn't give it back, was the fact that I could watch videos on it on YouTube.
Which you can do on an iPhone.
Right. And they weren't even that good. They were grainy.
But wasn't one of the things that you said you liked about it that you could download tons and tons of apps and not have to pay for each one like you do with the iPhone?
There was a section in the marketplace, but there wasn't tons and tons.
Not yet, but eventually that's going to be, I think, the major selling point for Google's platform is that you're going to have hundreds and thousands of privately developed applications that are not going to be charged.
Solitaire for free.
As opposed to what?
Solitaire
for $5.49. See, there you go.
$5.49.
That's the difference between the Google business model. But they didn't get the phone right.
They didn't. And I think maybe the G2, which I heard is coming out in something crazy like January.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately I was like, oh, blast.
Yeah, well, we tend to be like early adopters, and early adopters pay the price for first generation rollouts.
Yeah. And I did have the opportunity to try it out and send it back. So I did it, sent it back. Maybe I'll try it again, or maybe I'll just get the BlackBerry Bold.
All right. Well, thank you for that report.
There's my review.
Let's go to our first listener email. This is from Brian Zimdars. And he says, hey, Karim, I have two questions for you. One, my coworkers and myself debated this today. Do you think that iTunes is good or bad for the music industry? Some people thought that it was bad because many artists hope to take you on a journey as you listen to the entire CD, which is something that I actually point out in one of my episodes of Rock Soup, which you can find on YouTube.
That's the reason why I buy CDs.
By selecting one or two songs of the CD, you're not experiencing what the artist intended. However, some people thought that it was good because it held the artist responsible for what they were putting out and helped prevent those CDs that have one good song and the rest is shit. What's your take? Well, my take is that the artists who are trying to copy the major label model, which was, of course, have a hit single upon, or two or three, which you can hang the rest of the record on so that you can move these things out the door, back when you couldn't just pick one song off the album and you had to buy the whole disc, I mean, naturally led to having filler. And the independent artists who thought that they could emulate that success didn't realize that they were selling themselves short, but they were doing it without the millions of dollars worth of marketing. Now that you have iTunes, of course, you can sniper purchase whatever track off of an album that you want. And that does create a problem for the artists who are creating continuous sort of programming and a flow through.
I think that people who are looking for that type of artist who is creating an album that is an epic adventure, they're not the type of people that are just going to on a whim go to iTunes and download a song. Maybe they will one or two, but eventually they'll buy the album. I think it's a great venue if you hear this cool dance track or something and you go on iTunes, you can buy it for 99 cents and forget about the rest of the album.
I can't say that iTunes is bad for the industry. I can say that artists would like to think that their albums would be good from top to bottom, but sometimes that first song will pull in the interest for the second song and third song, and that you'll be able to purchase that record in the order that was intended. I know that for any one of my albums, there'll be a set of IDs that are for tracks that are 10, 15, 20 seconds long, which are just segues between one song and the next, and listening to them on their own makes absolutely zero sense. So my records obviously would make more sense if it was just one big old download, and you could say, okay, I want to pay $5 and just hear the whole thing as one file.
Right.
But I wouldn't say that that's a bad thing for the industry. I would say that it's up to the artist to decide how they put their music together. And hopefully the listeners who are responding to that are going to honor the intention of the artist as it stood. I think that anything that makes people listen to music is good for not the industry, but for music and for musicians. So, you know, I used to have arguments about whether music should be more protected or if it should be even given away for free. It's kind of demonstrated that the more music is available, the better it is. If you're not pirated at all, it's not nearly as beneficial to you than if you've been pirated a million times, actually.
And then no one knows about you.
Right. And then you leverage that over into merch and live concert sales. I'm not saying that I necessarily like the idea of people pirating any my music or anybody's music, because then you have no idea who's listening to it. One of the most important things for an artist to know is who's listening to it, or I don't even mean what's your social security number, but I mean how many people have purchased the album and
the type of demographic that you're reaching to.
Right. You want statistics in terms of just, is anybody paying attention out there? Because otherwise the artist can be sitting there putting the stuff out and think that absolutely no one is paying attention to it. And that's extremely disheartening. So some kind of accountability, even if it isn't financial, is important to the artist. And when we hear from you and you say, hey, your stuff is great, and I'm listening to it, and I started playing the guitar because of it, whatever, let me tell you that it really does mean something. It's not just going to some faceless mail receiver in a boardroom. It can really have a huge impact. Brian's second question is there any specific California prop in the selection that you feel is more important than others? There seem to be so many, I'm going to need a scorecard to take with me to the polls.
Prop 2, I feel, is important.
Prop 2 is about animal cruelty on farms, living conditions, more strict codes for how the animals are treated as they're raised for slaughter.
Which affects everybody because it affects the type of food we're consuming and how it's treated before it goes into our bodies.
Yeah. So Prop 2, you'd want to vote yes, because yes is for mandating stricter control of how the animals are raised and cared for. The thing is, by the time this podcast comes out, we'll be right at the edge of the election.
Dun, dun, dun.
These are big deals. There's millions and millions of dollars thrown into these props. Campaigns from both sides. You can have independent lobbyists and you can have huge corporations dueling with each other. And the tricky thing about these props is a yes doesn't necessarily mean yes for the thing you want, and it could be a no that you're looking for. So what I recommend is that you go to the Young Progressive Majority site. Just Google Young Progressive Majority. They have an amazing voter's guide there. They break it all down for you, explain what you would be voting for if you voted yes or no.
YPM, if you like to abbreviate.
And I've put it up on my Karamcast, so you can follow the link from there as well, karamcast.com. Now, do you want to talk about Fable 2 for a second?
I love Fable 2. I've been dreaming about it after I play it.
I was excited to find out about Fable 2 because Peter Molyneux is, before the Republicans campaign bought the word maverick, I would say he's a maverick in the gaming industry. He's somebody who's always tried to pioneer new ways of playing. And so there was a lot of anticipation about what he would do to re-envision how we interact in our video games. So what he does is in Fable 2, he implements this moral compass, and it runs on a gray scale as opposed to a, you know, black and white, meaning if you do something bad, it's not necessarily that they judge that that's a bad action. It may be a good action based upon your past choices. And as you progress with your character through this game, your character starts to take on the appearance of a benevolent or a malicious character. And you and I have been playing on separate accounts and seen that playing pretty much through the same game, we have extremely different games,
yeah.
Extremely different characters.
Yeah, to say the least.
What is?
I don't know what's happening in my game right now, but I don't know if I'm discouraged. Like right now, I feel like turning bad or something. Like just killing my wife, yes. My character.
You have a wife? Are you playing a female or male character?
I'm playing a female.
Okay.
And basically,
so Fable 2 would vote no on Prop 8.
Fable 2 would vote no on Prop 8.
Gay marriages are allowed?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. I'm married and everything. We have a ring, but I haven't figured out how to have sex yet.
Which you can have sex.
You can have sex. You can have
condoms.
You get condoms in your house. What I don't understand is, you know, once you can start doing little tricks and making people laugh, and all of a sudden everyone in the town loves you or hates you and their points go up. And there was like 9 people in a circle around me and one of them wanted to get married and I just pressed the ring option. What do you know? It was Angela the villager.
All right.
But now it's like I don't quite know where to go next and my relationship isn't progressing much. And
so you're stuck.
I'm stuck. So I don't know. I think my character has to do something drastic.
Now, there's another game that came out right around the time of Fable 2, which is Will Wright, creator of The Sims, and it's called Spore. And Spore is made by one of the other great figures in the gaming development industry, who is the guy that, as I mentioned, brought us Sims and created the most popular PC game, best-selling PC game of all time that has no aggression, no violence in it whatsoever. There's not a single gun fired. And playing The Sims is an unbelievable experience, especially because you can design the characters, the house you live in and everything to sort of emulate what your real life might be like. Okay, now I've got my mom figure. I've got this crazy aunt. I've got my 3 sisters, whatever it is that you have in real life. And you start to see a lot of the same dynamics play out. So there's there's one of my main interests in these kinds of games is you can third eye yourself. You can zoom out a little bit. The same reason I love having an aquarium in my apartment is that you can look at yourself from the outside and say, wow, I wonder if those fish know that I'm here.
That scares me.
What?
Because when I played Sims, I burnt my house down and my character would not put clothes on and she just kept going to the bar that was located outside.
And wasn't she having sex at her wedding with one of the neighbors?
Yeah. Like, and I wasn't controlling this. This was just happening.
Hmm.
I know.
Well, now we know a little more about you.
I do not burn things.
Well, so Spore is an amazing game. One of the differences between that and Fable 2 is that Will Wright, who I heard speak once at the Banff Media Conference, and I promise you guys in a future podcast, I will give you a clip of that that I think only 18 people ever heard. He talked about how all of his game design, and he talked about the game cycle. So when you play a video game, the most important thing is the 5-second cycle. How do you go in? How do you walk? How do you jump? And if that part of it works, then you move into the 5-minute cycle, which is what is a quest like, what is an objective like, and so on. He makes that paramount in all of his games, and that's why all of his games are so amazing. And Spore takes you through 5 different, completely different kinds of games in the phases of evolution. So you start off as a little amoeba, and then you go into walking out on land and deciding if you're an omnivore or a herbivore. And then the next phase of the game, you're in the tribal stage, and then you're in the civilization stage, and then you're in the colonizing space stage. And each one of them is a completely different way of playing, but you pick up exactly how to navigate through those things within 5 minutes. That is a testament to his brilliance. Unfortunately, the game doesn't have much depth beyond that, except that you can start it over and over again and see what a different choice would have led to. So there's the parallel between Fable 2 and Spore, and you know, I don't want to make this a giant video gaming blog this week, but I did want to point out that those are both really interesting. And
great games. I think they're intelligent games, and they're not just shoot 'em ups. They allow you to use your thinking skills and your logic and stuff, and it's a good pastime.
And of course, we're in the dawning of the independent game developer age. So as Xbox Live Arcade, which is becoming ever more popular, and we're at the eve of them finally launching their Netflix association, they've opened up Xbox Live Arcade for independent game developers. And we're going to start to see, you know, what you thought was the whole world of indie music and then indie movies and everything. Now you're going to see the indie game revolution.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And go visit indiegamereviewer.com and you'll see how this is becoming more and more of a grassroots movement. And people are going to start making money through the consoles, which are becoming the de facto cable boxes.
Is that just one word, Indie Game Reviewer?
Indie Game Reviewer, it's, yeah, .com.
Okay.
It's a good resource.
Sweet.
So,
Any more letters in the bag?
Well, we got some letters from Lito in California.
Cali.
Started listening to the podcast, and he said that he loves Amy's voice. It's so sexy. No offense to Karam, who's also got a nice to listen to voice, but Amy's the jam, so kudos to you, Amy. You've got a boyfriend somewhere out there in California. He says, listening to podcast 4, I have to say, I might be an exception, but I prefer buying a CD to downloading music. It doesn't have the same sensory tactile impression that records did on me, but I still enjoy having the actual CD. I know I'm in the minority, and it probably makes me a little strange, but, you know, hey, this is what I think, to put a final
note
on this whole thing about CDs and downloads and iTunes and the industry. And
seems to be a big uproar on it tonight.
Well, I think when people buy something, they like to have some sort of a receipt for their payment. When you go to eBay and you order a dress, you still get the dress. When you go to Amazon and you order a book, you still get the book. When you order songs and you download them, there is the instant gratification. It's like getting a cheeseburger at a McDonald's drive-thru. But, you know, these are fast-burning carbs. They go onto your hard drive. They go onto your iPod. But if any of that ever crashes, you're in trouble. It's really hard to regain that stuff. So there's something, even though the CD is proven to not be a device that has, or a media that has much more than a 20-year lifespan, at least it's there for a while, and it's instant backup if you lose your file, and you do get the artwork with it, and you do get that satisfaction of a receipt.
If you miss like the nostalgia or whatever of a CD, then you're not going to like downloads.
I don't know. Both of them work. I know that I personally don't really use iTunes to buy things. Mm-hmm. I use iTunes to listen to podcasts, which I think is great.
I use it to sell my music. That's about it.
And even then, even though we've been in this downloading revolution for almost a decade plus now, they're still trying to figure it out. It's just now that the biggest companies are coming around and understanding that digital rights management is just not the way to go. That on top of not receiving a physical product for your purchase, they were wrapping it in all sorts of technologies that they were trying out to control when and where and how many times you could listen to it. Walmart recently got into a huge pickle because they had sold tens of millions of downloads through their push and their customer infrastructure. And then all of a sudden, the DRM that they were using, which was created by Microsoft, was no longer being supported even by Microsoft. And now Walmart's got a big problem on its hands with tech support. So they have had to go and hire hundreds, if not thousands, of tech support people to assist their prior purchasers figure out what to do with their files and how to deal with it. And it's just going to cost Walmart a whole ton of money. iTunes implemented the iTunes Plus program, removed all the DRM for an extra dollar, whatever. They should just remove it altogether and keep it at 99 cents. And then Amazon, which is, of course, just this blue ocean thinking company and keeps trumping everybody else, mm-hmm. just straight out came out of the box and said, guys, no DRM, download whatever you want. And to come full circle, you really appreciated that when you got your Google first generation phone and you could go to Amazon, buy your download. There was no bogus, is your Amazon account linked to your Google phone? Is your iTunes library, blah, blah,
no,
blah.
You just used it. No, it was very easy. And then I pushed a little button with my pinky and there it was. Forget it, kid. My next ringtone.
So all of these people who, all of these companies that were so concerned that if they didn't control and limit the way that the music was being distributed digitally, don't realize that people are willing to pay for the convenience of it. It's just like anything. You pay.
Definitely. You pay for valet because you don't feel like walking.
You could go download the torrent and whatever else, but you don't know if you're going to find the right torrent. You don't know if it's going to have a Trojan or a virus attached to it. Sure, you can get music in all kinds of ways, but essentially it's the convenience, the searchability, the quality guarantee that you get from a place like Amazon that will lead people to buy these 99 cent downloads. I'm always happy to still hear you guys chime in on this stuff if you have different opinions. What I'm saying is it's all ongoing still, and nobody's really, there's no real de facto standard about how to distribute music digitally. Steve Albini, another maverick, I'm taking the damn word back from
Maybe
Sarah
I should,
Palin.
I should punch you every time you say it now.
No, punch Sarah Palin for
oh,
me.
Oh, goody.
Steve Albini believes that where music is going is it's going to become like a utility. And this is something that I at one point also thought maybe the way it goes, which is you pay like you do for water. You pay for metered usage. And once, it's not going to be Bluetooth because Bluetooth failed, as I've mentioned before, but there will be a wireless just life. And you'll be able to have your subscription, your metered usage of streaming media, pick it up from the stratosphere and just, hey, I want to just listen to all of this music wherever I want and distribute it and burn it, blah, blah, blah. And I pay $15, $20 for this.
A month.
And this isn't just a conjecture. I can tell you I have some pretty high up insider access to some heavy duty rollers that are creating patterns for this sort of thing. So that might be the way it still goes. But for now, enjoy the simplicity of a simple 99 cent one-click download.
Hoop hoop.
Because it seems to make enough sense.
Definitely.
Oh, one last thing. Speaking of Sarah Palin.
Halloween's coming up. No, just kidding.
Yeah. No, you were talking to me about how the person, the highest paid person on the McCain payroll was the...
Her makeup artist.
Right.
The highest paid person on her payroll is her makeup artist.
On McCain's payroll.
Yeah, McCain's payroll.
So what did they spend?
I think it was in the first, I think, month of her jumping on. It was something like $22,000 to $26,000.
Well, that's what you get. That's the look you can get for $26,000, folks. But if you listen to episode 6, then you can also try the solution, Kimberly Snyder's acai and goji berry based all-in-one solution. So maybe that'll give you a $26,000 facelift.
She needs to hook that up.
All right, guys. thanks for listening.
Yeah.
You can visit us at the Karam, or just karamcast.com. That's KERAMCAST.com. Write to us, info@karamcast.com. Check out all the other blogs, theculturepin.com, musiczeitgeist.com. Truffle Jones has got some new reviews coming up this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, tasteodyssey.com, where I put up all my favorite recipes. We talk about macrobiotics there.
Yummy.
And I'll see you soon.
See you soon, guys. Peace.